Good morning, everyone. We hope you're having a great start to the day. We hope you can get your juice to talking about art as we do every other Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. This is Tom Xenakis, and I'm with Sheila Blake, and we are the hosts of the Artist Experience radio show.
Good morning. Artist Experience is an hour-long radio show dedicated to looking at art. We hope that Tom and I can introduce our listeners to what we've been looking at and help you when you visit the exhibit. Create in your soul, in your experience, your own work of art. The Artist Experience radio program has a unique mission. We look into the inward experiences of engagement with art, and we desire to make them explicit, both in the creator and in you, our listeners. Tom and I are trying to demystify art, making your art adventure richer and more enjoyable whenever you experience the visual. We try to bring to light the experiences old, unfolding them into larger, brighter, more richly contoured surfaces, transforming vague awareness into definite knowledge. We have an Art as Experience page on Facebook where we put images of the things we're talking about. It's also a place where we'd love our listeners to give us ideas and feedback. Please look at it if you can while you're listening. You can stream the program at tacomaradio.org. Also, we're putting podcasts of this show on my website, SheilaBlake.com, and on artasexperience.com, so you can listen at any time. And the podcast can also be found on iTunes.
Well, Sheila and I are going to have a lot of fun today, and we're doing something that was first suggested by Clyde Enslin, one of our great programmers here at WOWD, whose show, Ride with Clyde, is fun and innovative. Clyde suggested to me that Sheila and I do a show about illustrated album covers, where artists, photographers, illustrators, and graphic designers got together with the musicians to do an album cover. Vinyl is back, and so are the covers. We thank Clyde for this, and there's going to be a series of fun shows for the future, beginning with this one. We surely will include Clyde as a guest in the studio to talk more about the subject.
Well, today Tom and I are going to talk about album covers from our era, the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
We're old.
And some of the music that we loved and some of those great album covers that we marveled at as artists and lovers of music. We want to have fun with this. And yes, we will be selfish about this and share the artful album covers that we enjoyed. This means we'll be doing another show in which we can have Clyde in the studio to share his knowledge and expertise with Bobby Hill about the great album covers from other eras and local artists and illustrators. But first, we wanted to pay tribute to the great Aretha Franklin. And we started the show with that unforgettable, soulful, and beautiful voice. We lost a treasure in Aretha Franklin last week, and we needed to share her with our listeners today. I spent 2 days last week absorbing, listening to, and celebrating Aretha Franklin all by myself in my studio, but in spirit with all of you. We're so lucky to have and continue to have the music she gave us. What a singer, what a voice, what a woman.
Well, last week I reflected on the memories of the great Aretha Franklin. The power of art is something we pride ourselves in talking about on this show, the Artist Experience radio program. Aretha Franklin exemplified this in her art and music. You know, it brings tears to my eyes, and it brought tears to my eyes when I heard the news, remembering my cousins and friends sitting on stoops in Brooklyn, New York, elbow to elbow, shoulder to shoulder, holding our two transistor radios, singing and swaying to the music "There Is a Rose in Spanish Harlem." It was a powerful memory for me, and I know so many of our listeners have that similar memory, and this kind of memory that binds us as humanity and community. May her memory be eternal. Yeah, so we're going to listen to a little music today, right? Let's go for it.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing. Some writers and critics who prophesize with your pen, And keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming. Was the loser now will be later to win. For the times, they are a-changing. Senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't lock up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. The battle outside raging will soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times, they are a-changing. Mothers and fathers throughout the land, and don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out of the new one if you can't lend your hand. For the times, they are a-changing.
So, one fall when I was teaching a long time ago, I started my first class by asking them to bring in a piece of art, whatever they considered a work of art to be, because I was curious. And about half of them brought in album covers. Album covers. Really? I was so stunned. I meant Van Gogh or Monet or Rembrandt. So I had a lot to learn, because this was the time when commercial art and fine art blended high and low. The line was erased. There were album covers being designed by artists like Peter Max and Andy Warhol and Art Crumb. I had been back in time, stuck on my high horse. So that was my first lesson in getting down with the changing times.
You know, I really love the story that you just shared. It's so wonderful, but also so true and appropriate for the times.
It is. Well, when I was a teenager, buying an album was like my greatest pleasure.
Totally.
Oh, I would hug the whole 12.5-inch cover and carefully strip away the plastic wrap and put on the record with no scratches yet and listen while I was staring at the cover. The pictures were so much a part of the experience. I loved the Rachmaninoff's second piano concerto with a cover of The Crashing Sea and Harry Belafonte Calypso with a tropical pink background. Anyway, that all changed with CDs and now without any real visual association. So it seems like a good time to indulge in a little nostalgia for that great opportunity to treasure an art form.
Well, the music we were listening to in the late 50s to the 1980s, actually, was, of course, stimulated by that art movement called pop, popular culture. And most coincidentally, this pop culture consumed everything in art and music, Hollywood. All the arts were involved. And, of course, the volatile events that shaped the era, like the Vietnam War, civil rights, political and leaders, victims of assassination, and, of course, drugs, sex, and rock and roll. It was a very exciting yet turbulent time. And, of course, Sheila and I lived it. Oh, the album cover. I really got involved with that one. The album cover expressed something beyond the music. It often highlighted the kind of music, whether it be surreal, earthy, soulful. The genre was tied to a visual, and these visuals became insignias and signatures for the musicians or the bands. Think about the Beatle album covers, such as Revolver, Sgt. Pepper's, Abbey Road. They were synonymous with the music and the times. And there are many examples of this. Well, I wanted to talk a little about the format of the vinyl album cover, because it presents some problems for artists and designers. The format's coming from the circle, because the album is actually housed in a square within a circle, which is the album, and the square is an unusual format, and artists needed to consider this. Then, of course, was the print quality, and in those days, it was not computer-based. I think most of our young listeners will probably not know that. So the print quality was paramount when working with photographs and illustrations or handmade art. It's something that's a very complicated affair. We have to registrations, overlays, and there was a variety of printing techniques to get the art and the photography right, and as close to the original as possible, and that's really important. The album became a format that contained the music and info about making the music. In some ways, it became kind of like theater production. Then, of course, we had the rock operas and other genres that were more complex, from The Who, Jethro Tull, Queen, and of course, Prince, and Michael Jackson, down the line. So theater, music, and art were actually synthesized. Sheila, when it came to pop, so many artists got into the act. Remember those great album covers that were greatly established by the artists of the day?
Oh, yeah. The first cover of the Velvet Underground, Andy Warhol's in-house band. The cover was designed by Andy himself, and it was white with a yellow banana, and you could peel back the skin of the banana to reveal a pink banana. Get it?
Yeah, get it?
The only writing on the front cover is Andy Warhol's signature, but everyone knew what was inside. And then Warhol designed the Rolling Stones Sticky Fingers cover with a working zipper on mixed black leather pants, revealing a tasteful glimpse of a white cotton briefs. A true icon by a true icon.
Yeah, that was terrific. Yeah.
And then David Byrne of the Talking Heads was in the Castelli Gallery, and he saw some black and white drawings by Robert Rauschenberg, and he got hold of him and asked him to design the cover for Speaking in Tongues. Mm. The packaging is a transparent, hard plastic outer case with artwork and credits printed on three floppy, 12-inch circular transparent plastic collages. Each is in a primary color with a collage of images, including a wrecked car, a highway billboard, and a suburban bedroom. And they could be spun to produce different effects. It took a couple of years to find someone to produce the vinyl. It was the same outfit that packaged Oscar Mayer Wieners.
That must have been an expensive album cover to reproduce.
It took so long to get it right. And because it was so hard to manufacture, the Rauschenberg cover was printed in a limited edition run of 50,000. Byrne himself designed an alternate cover for the remaining million or so album sleeves, a pared down abstract painting in blue and yellow. The fans could own a Rauschenberg for just $12.98, and super fans could pay $100 for one of the 1,000 deluxe editions signed by both Byrne and Rauschenberg and sold through the art galleries.
So that's kind of pop and capitalism combined.
Right, there you go. Maybe that was the beginning, huh? So Andy Warhol bought the album at Tower Records in the East Village in 1983. Rauschenberg was upset because he only got $2,000 for the job, and Andy told him he was right. He should have gotten $25,000. And then the Beatles' iconic album covers were important for the music inside, but each of them is a statement of where they were on their magical, drug-enhanced journey. By the time they made Rubber Soul, the Beatles were total pothead, and the distorted lens photos announced the drug experience of the music inside. Revolver featured a color cover illustration created by a German musician and artist, Klaus Voormann, who they met in amphetamine munching stint in Hamburg in the early 1960s. On the back cover, the band in the studio had sunglasses to hide their stoned eyes. And how many people have walked across the zebra stripes at Abbey Road because of the album cover 50 years ago? The Beatles' Sgt. Pepper Lonely Hearts Club Band remains the most iconic and most expensive album cover of all times, from Paul McCartney's original concept to the final design staged by the British pop artist Peter Blake, not my husband, and his then-wife John Hayworth. It's not just an album cover, but a dazzling display of modern art that defines its era. The concept was for the Beatles themselves to appear in costume as Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, surrounded by a gathering of influential people as if they had just performed a concert. And they were chosen from a collective list drawn up by John, Paul, George, and maybe Ringo, Also, notably, Elvis Presley wasn't included because Paul McCartney said, in an unusual admission of modesty, he was too important and too far above the rest of us to even mention. Those that made the final cut remain a fascinating cross-section of cultures, and each individual is representative of the Beatles' own interests. Well, I won't tell you all of them, but the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who brought transcendental meditation to the West, Mae West, Lenny Bruce, Carl Jung, Fred Astaire, Edgar Allan Poe, Simon Rodia, who built the Watts Towers, Bob Dylan. Dylan's lyrics inspired the Beatle, who in turn partly inspired Dylan to go electric.
Wow.
And Aldous Huxley's, whose book, The Doors of Perception, was required reading for the countercultural elite in the 60s. Karl Marx, Marlon Brando, and his motorcycle in The Wild Ones. He captured the growing frustration of the generation that gave birth to rock and roll. It's so interesting that Brando's rivals in The Wild One were called the Beatles, and it almost the namesake of the Beatles. And then in a complete turnaround, the White Album had only the Beatles on one, in one corner. The lack of a cover photo just fueled the rumors that John and Paul couldn't stand each other by that time. So the album cover for Blind Faith, Eric Clapton's roommate, the photographer Bob Seideman, got the idea of a pubescent girl holding a spaceship. So he approached a 14-year-old on the London Underground about modeling for the cover, and he met with her parents, but she was too old for the effect he wanted. Instead, he used her 11-year-old sister, Mario Aragosian, who asked for a horse as payment. The spaceship was the material object that symbolized the achievement of human creativity and its expression through technology. To carry this new spore into the universe, innocence would be the ideal bearer, a girl as young as Shakespeare's Juliet. The spaceship would be the fruit of the tree of knowledge, and the girl the fruit of the tree of life. She got 40 pounds, but she never got the horse.
10 years ago, on a cold, dark night, someone was killed 'neath the town hall lights. There were few at the scene, but they all agreed that the slayer who ran looked a lot like me. Now she walks these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave when the night winds wail. Nobody knows, nobody sees, nobody knows but me. The scaffold was high and eternity near. She stood in a crowd and shed not a tear. But sometimes at night, when the cold wind moans in a long black veil, she cries o'er my bones. She walks these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave when the night winds wail. Nobody knows, nobody sees, nobody knows but me. The judge said, son, what is your alibi? If you were somewhere else, then you won't have to die. I spoke not a word, though it meant my life. I'd been in the arms of my best friend's wife. She walks these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave when the night winds wail. Nobody knows, nobody sees, nobody knows but me. Nobody knows.
Well, we have to share a few more other great artists that were involved with album productions. The great Salvador Dali, the Spanish surrealist artist, worked with Jackie Gleason on his album Lonesome Echo. And he also worked with other artists from The Messiah and Nicholas Drake's Pink Moon. But in 1955, Jackie Gleason asked his good friend Salvador Dali to design this album cover, Lonesome Echo. Dali wrote a description of his artwork on the record's liner notes, which reads, "The first effect is that of anguish, of space, and of solitude. Secondly, the fragility of the wings of a butterfly projecting long shadows of late afternoon reverberates in the landscape like an echo. The feminine element, distant and isolated, forms a perfect triangle with the musical instrument, and it echoes the shell." It's a very beautiful painting on the cover, and as surreal as it gets and as poetic as Salvador Dali can get. Two other artists that were very instrumental in their day as artists were the street artists, or graphic artists, or graffiti artists of Keith Haring and Blansky. And they both were working separately on the cusp of graffiti art that came to life in New York City and elsewhere. Keith Haring did a series of Christmas albums. He also, and there's several of them, they're very simple with his graphic mark on them. And also he did an album for Sylvester and Eminem. So we also have Blansky, who did an album for Blur. And it was to design the album for 2003's Think Tank. He created a couple embracing as they both wore deep sea diving helmets. Although Blansky usually doesn't create commercial art, he made a decision to work with Blur because he was a big fan of their sound. And I think that's really important, the relationship between the music and the art. And the original piece later sold at auction for about £75,000 and $110,000. And then we had Lady Gaga, who employed Jeff Koons, the contemporary artist who designed the album cover Op Pop. He created a nude sculpture of Gaga with a strange glistening blue sphere between her legs and fragments of the famous artwork like The Birth of Venus. But today, you know, I was driving over today, and I decided to put an early Santana album, CD, into my car. You don't put an album in the CD. Imagine that one on the head. on the front of the car. Anyway, maybe someday that'll happen. And I was thinking about all those early Santana albums, and Santana 1, Abraxas, and the one after that. And they had great art. The first one, Santana 1, had a lion on the cover. And it was designed by Lee Conklin, who was a very famous artist of the psychedelic period from 1968 and 1970. And he came back from the Korean War, and he went to New York City, then he went to California, and he started designing psychedelic album covers. I'd actually have heard of him as an artist. And then in the second fantastic album, as we all remember, Abraxas, where we had Matt de Clairwine, was an artist from Germany, and Carlos Santana saw this artwork by this guy, and he said, you know, I'd like him to design an album cover. And in 1961, he had just arrived from Germany in New York City to do his art, and they commissioned him to do the album cover of Abraxas, which to me is one of the greatest albums of all time, but also a really, really neat album cover.
Well, the artist Shepard Fairey designed the album art for the Smashing Pumpkins 2, The Zeitgeist. Fairey wanted to make a political statement on climate change. He created a black and red image of the Statue of Liberty about to be submerged underwater. He said, "I think global warming is an issue that is currently relevant, time sensitive, and a symptom of the short-sightedness of the U.S. As a broader metaphor, the drowning Statue of Liberty, a revered icon of the U.S., symbolizes the imminent demise of many of the ideals upon which the nation was founded." And Radiohead's A Moon-Shaped Pool by Stanley Donwood. Stanley Donwood had designed every one of Radiohead's album covers since The Bends, including the album art for the British band's latest record, A Moon-Shaped Pool. He designed the artwork in a barn near the studio where the band recorded the album and was able to listen to their sessions and react to it in the moment in acrylic. That is so cool.
Yeah, that is nice.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah.
And Eels End Times by Adrian Tamin. In 2010, the New Yorker cartoonist Adrian Tamin provided the cover art for End Times, the second in a trilogy of concept albums from Eels. The album cover features a ragged old man, which matches with the album's theme of divorce and getting older.
Well, we're going to take another break now, and we're going to listen to a few musical selections, but we wanted to take a break to listen to the fantastic illustrated album from the Beatles, Revolver, from 1966, which was the illustrated art for that album was an homage to the great British artist Audrey Beardsley. So let's listen up.
Good day, sunshine. Sunshine, I need to laugh, and when the sun is out, I've got something I can laugh about. I feel good in a special way. I'm in love and it's a sunny day. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. We take a walk, the sun is shining down, burns my feet as they touch the ground. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Then we lie beneath the shady tree. I love her and she's loving me. She feels good, she knows she's looking fine. I'm so proud to know that she is mine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
Tacoma Park, 94.3 FM. So many album covers feature the photograph as a centerpiece to the art. Many famous photographers came to play a role in the imagery of the era. There are some big names in this category of art as album covers. Yep, Robert Mapplethorpe is a big name in photography, and especially back then, he was a great friend of the rocker, artist, and poet Patti Smith. An album cover with the right imagery can help create a totally immersive experience. The Velvet Underground to Radiohead. Some of the world's most talented musicians have enlisted the help of famous artists to create some truly memorable album covers. Photographer Robert Mapplethorpe photographed the cover of Patti Smith's debut studio album, Horses, in 1975. He shot the image at his apartment in New York City using natural light and a Polaroid camera. Patti Smith is maybe the one person I would love to have coffee with, or maybe a martini. I'm waiting. It'll happen.
It's a morning show, remember.
As she writes in Just Kids, Patti Smith met Robert Mapplethorpe in the summer of 1967, and they became fast friends, lovers, and creative collaborators. For the cover of her classic debut, she said, there was never any question that Robert would take the portrait for the cover of Horses. At the time the portrait was taken, the two had known each other for almost a decade. Looking at the portrait now, Patti Smith says, I never see me, I see us.
Oh, that's wonderful about collaboration.
Isn't,
you know,
that beautiful?
Yeah,
it's
terrific.
And then in 1972, Charlie Watts, the drummer for the Rolling Stones, met with Man Ray, the Dada artist, and asked if he would design the cover for the new album, Exile on Main Street. Man Ray was 82 years old, and he agreed and produced a design in which the faces of the five Rolling Stones appeared inside black circles on a white background. The inspiration, he said, was the song Tumbling Dice, which was the first single on the album. After the Stones rejected the polished proposal for their cover of their 10th album, they commissioned the documentary photographer Robert Frank for grittier imagery. Mick Jagger invited Robert Frank to come to L.A., and he photographed band members walking around seedy parts of L.A.'s own Main Street, mostly emerging with discreet headshots. After the photos were developed, Jan van Hammersfeld, who put together the album package, interspersed these portraits with images from Frank's book, The Americans, into a black and white contact sheet of bold characters with the Stones on the back. He made a package that was not glamorous, not a friendly image to put on display in the record stores, but it was that image that established the anti-establishment look of punk.
Genius. That was a genius
idea. It was genius. Who would know? Yeah. Especially to reject Man Ray. Many Stones fans point to Exile on Main Street as the height of their golden age, but also the tipping point after which money and drugs and fame consumed the band. One critic wrote, "If Exile on Main Street isn't the sound of the Rolling Stones dying, it's at least the sound of them going down in flames. But what a sound, and what flames." So I'm going to talk about Lee Friedlander. He's one of my absolutely most famous photographers. In 1969, he was a commercial photographer. He was working on contract assignments, shooting portraits of jazz greats like Charlie Mingus, John Coltrane, Ray Charles, and Miles Davis for the fabulous album covers. If you see these photographs, you will recognize them instantly. And the photograph on the cover of Miles Davis in The Silent Way was the point, because it's Miles he's so emotional. And after that, Friedlander became an artistic photographer. And he became famous in the art world for his roving, meditative self-portraits of his shadow morphing with a tree's silhouette projected into a woman's fur coat. He, like many artists, retained the taste for improvisation and the spur-of-the-moment composition from jazz. And now I'm going to talk about an old, not quite boyfriend that I used to know, named Roland Sherman. And he was a big crush. He was so cool when no other college boy even knew what cool was. He used to slouch around with a pipe and shades. And he shot a picture of Bob Dylan in concert with his hair backlit like a halo that became the award-winning cover for Dylan's greatest hits. He also photographed so many musicians when they were young and pretty and innocent. Dylan, Joni Mitchell, Johnny Cash, Judy Collins, Joan Baez, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Woodstock. Pictures that you'd recognize. And I imagine that this cool guy with a camera slung around his neck and his shirt open down to his navel, he was welcome.
Wow. Well, you know, there's so many fantastic photographs that have embellished the covers of albums. And one of my favorites in the early 70s was by a British photographer, Ethan Russell. And it's the famous album titled Who's Next? And if you recall, it was very progressive at the time. It shows this big block of concrete, a wall of concrete in the middle of this urban, you know, disaster, apocalyptic setting. And it has four of the members of the band urinating on this wall. Well, the truth of the matter is, it was so outrageous at the time. The fact of the matter was, when they did the shoot, they couldn't get the four great band members of The Who to urinate at the same time. And it became very, very frustrating for the photographer. So they found a pool of water. It had rained, and they took the water and they just ran it on the four places on the wall, and then they walked away from the wall, and they were all kind of impromptu, like they were, you know, zippering up and finishing their work, and then they shot the thing, the photo, and it's a classic album. It's also one of the greatest albums of all time, but it's a great story that goes with it. Well, many, many other famous photographers, like Ouija, who did posthumously, George Michael took his famous photograph with Living Without Prejudice, and he used it, and Ouija is really an amazing photographer. Mm-hmm. And of course, we have Richard Avedon. Richard Avedon did Fresh and also Sly and the Family Stone. It's a great photo of Sylvester Sly vignetted in white. And he also did Simon and Garfunkel bookends. So Richard Avedon got into the action. And, of course, there's the great photographer William Eggleston, who did Radio City, Big Star, and Primal Scream. But I wanted to talk about the great photographer Peter Hujars, who did the album covers for Anthony and the Johnsons. If you don't know Anthony and the Johnsons, they're a great British band that deals with issues of gender and lots of kind of interesting work. And he was a great photographer that also was a victim of the AIDS epidemic, and he did the famous album I Am a Bird Now from 2005. And, of course, we have Robert Whittaker, the British artist and photographer that did the great album for Cream and the Beatles. And finally, Annie Leibovitz, really big name, who did the classic Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen. Well, so many photographers got into the act, and, you know, their work embellished these kind of things. Now we want to kind of go into a little different era. Sheila, why don't you kind of talk about that?
Sure. Well, we wanted to cover the range of specifically illustrated album covers from the day that was where they were exploding from England with the British wave, and the California art and music scene of the surrealistic age of the Haight-Ashbury district of San Francisco, with psychedelic rock, acid rock, and the age of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Photography and illustration was often used. Many famous album covers came from that era, and with music that would knock one's socks off. And I want to talk about Janis Joplin with Big Brother and the Holding Company. Her Cheap Thrills album was by R. Crumb. We've talked about him before in the humor show, because he invented these comic books. And he captured the spirit and the weirdness of San Francisco at that time, and the spirit of Janis's voice. And then Country Joe and the Fish, and also Led Zeppelin, a cover from the crop black and white photograph of the explosion of the Hindenburg. When we think of the psychedelic era, we think of color that swirls and whirls, and words that loses itself with words that jangle, and contrasting colors that make your eyes explode. The art was taken from an original photograph of the disaster, the art of the Led Zeppelin photograph. And this was the image that actually gave the group their name, as it was a Led Zeppelin. And that's a true story. The posters and album covers are in the great tradition of the Belle Epoque posters of Toulouse-Lautrec. And there's Peter Max made a poster of Lautrec, a black and white bleed out of Lautrec's head, with his name on his hat in those fat, wobbly, intertwined letters. So Max is tipping his hat to Lautrec. I thought that was so great.
Yeah, that's a mm-hmm. wonderful homage to Lautrec. Well, the mm-hmm. rise of tattoo art, graffiti and street art, and the art of Asia and tie-dye techniques from Japan and Southeast Asia began to influence the art genres of album covers. Also, we had Chicano art, Latino art, Hispanic art also began to appear. And then the concepts of the montage and the collage were art techniques that were also used in that era, which gave that psychedelic look. that were especially prevalent on the West Coast. An album which I remember came to that comes to mind that blew me away when I first saw it, and I was very young, was Cream's second album of Disraeli Gears from 1967. The artist was an Australian artist that lived in the same apartment as Eric Clapton. His name was Martin Sharp, and he, with the photographer Robert Whittaker, they produced the psychedelic art that mimics the times, and they called it the warm fluorescent sound of the band, which I think is appropriate for that smoky kind of psychedelic sound of Cream. And the Grateful Dead had a series of albums in which the word skull was in the titles, and they were very well illustrated, like Skull and Roses, and the other one was Skull, but I can't say the second word on that part of the album on the radio. The controversy of that derogatory word became the banner of the Grateful Dead, and Alton Kelly and Stanley Moose were the illustrators, and the artwork became synonymous with the Grateful Dead of the 70s. Remember all those skulls that we used to see as bumper stickers and t-shirts? That was very much part of the look of the Grateful Dead. But I needed to talk about Hypnosis, which was a design group in England made up of five blokes, and they had a great sense of design style. They were from Cambridge, England, and they were very gifted. Hypnosis was spelled H-I-P as opposed to the other way of spelling hypnosis, and of course, gnosis means knowledge, so it was a very cool name for a design firm. They did 190 album covers for a host of British and American bands. The most classic ones that they've designed was Pink Floyd from 1968, The Sourceful of Secrets, and of course, Houses of the Holy by Led Zeppelin from 1973. They did T-Rex, Genesis, Peter Gabriel, Black Sabbath, Bad Company. The list goes on and on. And we're going to play in a second now a song from Cream from those days way back when.
I'll soon be with you, my love. Give you my dull surprise. I'll be with you, darling, soon. I'll be with you when the stars start falling. I've been waiting so long. Sunshine of your love. I'm with you, my love. The light shining through on you.
Yes, I'm with you, my love. It's the morning, just we two.
I'll stay with you, darling.
There was a time when albums of the classical arts, like poetry and classical music, were presented as fine art. So I have albums like an album of Daphnis and Chloe by the Boston Symphony Orchestra with a cover by Aristide Milhaud and a woodcut. And then I have a Dylan Thomas album with a woodcut portrait of Dylan Thomas by the master woodcut artist Antonio Fresconi. And that was especially made for this recording.
Yeah, well, those are fantastic, actually. Two great artists as well. Well, Frank Zappa's Overnight Sensation album from 1973 was illustrated by David McCacken. And he illustrated hundreds of album covers from a host of artists for the 1970s, AC/DC. He did Warren's Dog Eat Dog, Freak Show, and even Steve Miller, The Joker. So there was a lot of album covers. And he also did Left Overture by Kansas, which was a great album in the 70s. And he did work for The Temptations and The Beach Boys.
It's important that we mention that many musical artists have illustrated their own album covers, as they also had a fine hand in fine arts and drawing, painting, and graphic design. Joni Mitchell, she went to art school before she was a musician, and she thought of herself as a painter first. We're so lucky, though, because she made most of her album covers, so we get to see those, you know, during a 10-year span, she made them all. And they're nice. They're lyrical. To use a musical adjective, they capture some of the floating dreaminess of the early 70s, but they're not nowhere as fine as her music. And Dylan, well, I guess he can do anything, or he thinks he can do everything. He's not a great painter, but his stuff is surprisingly pretty. He did a couple of album covers, too, with two of his paintings. And he also did watercolors of places we've been. He did that when he traveled in hotel rooms and views. And they're colorful. He really likes deep space. He likes those railroad tracks disappearing into the distance, you know, just like his songs. And his paintings are a lot softer and more likable in contrast to his concert demeanor.
Well, there are other artists that have gone to art school as well. And excuse me, Yusuf Islam, who is formerly known as Cat Stevens, had gone to art school as well, and he illustrated his early albums of the 70s, which, of course, are timeless, Teaser and the Fire Cat, and the other one, for some reason, just escaped me. And there was Kirkwood from the Meat Puppets did an album, and Marilyn Manson absolutely illustrated Lest We Forget. And, of course, there's John Lennon. We forget about John Lennon's albums that he illustrated,
yeah.
One of which was Mind Games.
I'm glad you said that. Well, I really hope you've enjoyed this show. We're going to wrap it up soon, but I wanted to say that some of the difficulty in researching this show had to do with finding out who the artists were.
Right.
Because they're often not credited on the album covers or anywhere, and that's kind of a shame.
So, it took a little of research, although we've had fun, and we decided to get selfish here and talk about album covers from the music that we enjoyed. And, of course, they were visually fabulous, and the music was fabulous, too. Maybe the show introduces the fine relationship between visual art and music. We had a show months ago about the relationship between poetry and art, and, in fact, we're going to have three shows about this topic alone. We played a bit more music, and we touched the surface of this topic, and we hope to revisit it in October, if not sooner. We hope we got your ears and eyes stimulated to look at and listen to the music, and we hope you enjoyed the show. Stay tuned to our next exciting programming on WWDLP Tacoma Park, featuring, Bobby Hill and This Music. Bobby shares his incredible knowledge and musical depth with a musical program every Saturday, and it's from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., so hold that dial fixed, and avant-garde jazz is right here, right after us, with another terrific show, Borderlines, on Wednesday mornings from 10 a.m. to noon. No borders, no lines, with great music. Experience the art and visual in everything you do, and thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
The wind is in from Africa. Last night I couldn't sleep. Oh, you know it sure is hard to leave here, Carrie, but it's really not my home. My fingernails are filthy. I've got beach tar on my feet. And I miss my clean white linen and my fancy French cologne. Oh, Carrie, get out your cage.
bottle of wine, and we'll laugh and toast to nothing and smash our empty glasses down. Let's have a round for these freaks and these soldiers, a round for these friends of mine. Let's have another round for the bright red devil who keeps me in this tourist town. Come on, Carrie, get out your cane. And rent me a grand piano and put some flowers round my room. But let's not talk about fare-thee-wells now. The night is a starry dawn, and they're playing that scratchy rock and roll beneath the mantle of moon. Come on, Carrie, get out your cane. I couldn't sleep. Oh, you know it sure is hard to leave you, but it's really not my home. Maybe it's been too long a time since I was scrambling down in the street. Now they got me used to that clean white linen and that fancy French cologne. Oh, Carrie, get out your cane. I'll put on my finest suit. Oh, you're a mean old daddy, but you're out of sight.